The views, opinions, or advice offered by this show's host do not necessarily reflect those of News Talk 780 KOH or its parent company, Cumulus Media. This is Bosma on Business with award-winning entrepreneur Mike Bosma, sponsored by Keystone CPAs. We're getting Northern Nevada back to business.
Good morning, Reno. It is Mike Bosma, your business-savvy CPA, coming from the KOH studio. Hey, you Garden Show listeners, you want to hang tight and hang on. Holder Newt, she's raring. Today's installment of Bosma on Business, Brian Wheeler from Keystone Wealth Advisors is going to help you understand, you know, how your garden could grow to create a lot of cabbage. Now, that's not the kind of cabbage that you stew with, for St. Patrick's Day. This is the kind of cabbage you actually put in your bank account and get a return on. It's my favorite kind of cabbage, financial cabbage. Of course, Brian Wheeler is a principal at Keystone Wealth Advisors, affiliated with Keystone CPAs, and frequent contributor to the show, of course, each and every Saturday. 60 minutes of sometimes action-packed business adventure, other times just straight tomfoolery. Without further ado, Brian, welcome back.
Hey, thank you, Mike. Glad to be here.
No, I just think it's timely. I've had numerous people... either decide to sell their business, get into contract for business, or close their business. A lot of mergers and acquisitions activity around. And out of that has come a lot of discussions about financial planning, particularly a comprehensive financial plan that nobody seems to think about until they're getting ready to sell their sole producing asset. might be worthwhile doing it ahead of time. So just thought, Brian, we'd kind of have a show baked around some of the maybe the errors we've seen, some of the planning opportunities we do, and when it comes to financial planning, and who knows, it could be fun. What do you think?
I think it's great fun. I think you're right. So many people wait till the very last minute and realize they're cutting themselves short of some of the great options that could have happened if we started 3 to 5 years ago.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, no, that's, 3 to 5 years, people, man. Just, I can make all the, in fact, 5 years is probably the threshold that if you come to me in 5 years, I can make all kinds of magic happen. Like, I can look at your transaction, I can make it tax-free. I can look at your transaction, I could cut your taxes in half. I can look at your, but 5 years is, people, the magic number. Now, I'll back that up a little bit. So the reason it is, if you're a C corporation, I look at your business. I do a ton of transactions. We have a lot of visibility to buying and selling businesses. If you're a C corporation, subchapter C, and you're kind of rolling in your 21% federal tax rate, thinking, how smart am I? I'll look at your business and I'll have an opinion on if we can sell the stock of the business or the assets and, kind of what that delta is. And the reason that matters is because if you, sell the assets of your business in your C corporation, and then you have to either pay that out in the form of wages, which is going to be taxed at 37%, or even better, net investment income tax is another 3.8%. Oh, plus the 1.45%. Medicare portion of FICA and Medicare. So you're over 40% tax. I can, if it looks like you're going to only be able to sell your assets of your company, I'm going to make an S election. It's an easy, two-page form 2553. And then when you sell those same assets in 5 years, you're going to pay 20% instead of over 40%. Just cut it in half just by making a simple election, being taxed as an S corp. It's really sometimes not more complicated than that. Now, there's other times where I'll look at your business and I'll say, well, hey, if I've got 5 years of runway, maybe your business is actually a prime candidate to be able to sell the stock. Well, and maybe you've incorporated and maybe I can magically convert you to what's called a 1202 qualified small business stock. And, your pre-contribution gain doesn't get a pass on tax, but, how about a zero tax rate on your post appreciation. So, and all gets in, you get 5 years to value it and blah, 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 blah. So it's just, but I need 5 years. So, thanks for bringing that up, Brian. Brian Wheeler for Keystone Wealth Advisors. So maybe, walk through a couple of the cases you're currently working on. Maybe just anecdotally, what was presented and what were the problems and what are the solutions?
Well, there's a huge laundry list of challenges we see all the time, but you know, some of them, especially on the couple of cases we're working on right now, are just, you know, the potential bleed into that other tax that looks like that federal estate tax. Mm-hmm. You know, right now, most of our clients aren't bumping up against that threshold because the exclusion rate is so high. But we are going to experience a sunset of that law that will go back to, you know, pre-2017 rates, which will be, you know, $5 million exclusion per individual adjusted for inflation. And we're seeing a lot more of our clients, especially with the business transaction and the other assets they've accumulated, are starting to push up beyond those thresholds. And nobody started talking about, you know, how they can reduce the value of their estate prior to that happening. And, you know, we're just running out of time on some of those discussions.
Well, right. And so, yeah, the currently state tax exemption, that's the tax you pay when you die, or your estate or your heirs pay. But it's only per person 12.7, probably over 13 this year now with inflation. But, you know, 13 million ish, let's call it. You know, for most mortals, people are like, yeah, it doesn't apply to me. But, but yeah, it ratchets down to five, or even, you know, I think the surprising thing with inflation now, people that, you know, they're thinking, oh gosh, you know, I made a windfall. You know, if I'm sold my business, or the stock market, at least for 2021 was crazy. Maybe they'll dampen enthusiasm for 22, see what happens in 23. But, you know, people have done really well in the stock market. I mean, you know, we had a case we were working on. Their Apple stock alone went up sixfold, right? So, and then they're kind of locked into thinking or feeling, well, I can't sell my Apple stock because I'll get taxed to death. You know, how do you tackle those kind of challenges, Brian? So, you know, because, you know, we have, you talk about estate tax problems, but also then the current income tax problem, and, you know, how do you manage those expectations?
You know, it's just, again, planning, you know, understanding short-term and long-term goals, and how we can, you know, divest ourselves of some of those concentrated holdings, which is usually a prudent investment strategy, and, you know, the use of technology is available today. You know, we've got resources available to us in our back office that can help us do a tax analysis if we're going to start unloading concentrated positions in stocks, do it in a way that we can minimize tax exposure over a 2 to 5 year period while still getting the more diversified portfolio feel and remove some of the risk of that concentrated position.
Right.
So there's just a lot of considerations there.
Well, for the benefit of our listeners, that tax-efficient divestiture strategy, and think of it this way. What is it, 30 components of the Dow Jones? So let's say you have, you know, in my case, I mentioned Apple. You've got Apple stock. And you want to deconcentrate your position of Apple stock. You know, and you could invest in each of the 30 components of the Dow Jones. And the reality is, and you're doing this so that you don't have such a high volatility in the one stock that you have in your portfolio. So you're like, hey, I'd rather spread this over 30 instead of one. Well, the reality is, you know, let's say you invest in 30 and you're searching for a blended yield that's going to be whatever the Dow Jones is going to do. So let's say over the year, it's going to trend 10% up. So you're just looking for a 10% yield. And because that's going to be, you got 30 stocks working for you instead of one. Well, the reality is if you, you know, of those 30, 20 are going to be up and 10 are going to be down for a blended yield of 10% in my example. But we know we can sell those losers off and reap those tax reap the tax on that, so that my yield is still 10%. But then I have those recognized tax losses to offset the gain for selling the stock, and so that just, it dampens the tax problem. Knowing when we're chasing yield, we're going to have some winners and losers. We can sell the losers, keep the winners. Always keep the winners, people. That's the phrase that pays, as Samantha Stone would say. but you harvest those tax losses and then invest in a similar stock that has a similar characteristic, just not that one, or at least for 30 days, or you'll not be able to deduct it due to the wash sale rules. So, but that's what I mean. It's like you can do this, and you just, yeah, and we don't do it. We subscribe to a service that does that, because otherwise we would be pining over this stuff, and you couldn't pay us enough to do it. but use technology to be like, okay, this is how this works. It makes it uh, that that gain recognition dampens the enthusiasm from a tax perspective on that. So I got Brian Wheeler on the phone talking about some of the cases he's currently working on, what we find, and the solutions. You know, what are the problems? So what about some other ones? We're talking about the one doctor that was actually in the process of selling his practice and said, you know, and I was talking to him, like, you know, we might want to look at this because, you know, I don't know if you have enough. And, it's, you know, and so they had a lot of insurance, which I didn't necessarily understand. How, talk to me about what the fact pattern was there, Brian, and what you found.
Well, yeah, we found them with a long laundry list of personal life insurance, business life insurance, as well as disability insurance, you know, maybe 6 years or 6 months or a year away from a business sale. Some of those things in the short run aren't of major concern. But sometimes how things are titled and how they're owned and what the impact of a unexpected death or dual death, common disaster of a husband and wife in a situation like that, could trigger some major tax implications that they weren't even aware about. And so just restructuring ownership on some of those things can help move the client away from a disastrous loss that was totally unintended. That and, you know, just like you said, understanding, you know, once they do sell a business, once they do get the proceeds of their business, do whatever they can to mitigate any capital gains through that sale, do they have enough assets to generate the income and the type of assets that will generate efficient income to carry them through the rest of their lifestyle?
Right.
You know, I'm not sure that anybody's done an analysis for them before. They've had an advisor for many, many years doing things that are more transactional and helping them in some ways. But I'm not sure anybody has a clear picture about where they're headed and why.
Right. Well, and that's what, you know, we were talking about, the life insurance policies that they had. What happens, you know, you think, well, life insurance is tax-free. Well, it's income tax-free. So what happens if you have one spouse has a life insurance policy on the other spouse? How does that impact estate taxation?
Well, when we have life insurance is owned individually, meaning by one spouse or the other, when the individual that's insured passes away, though the proceeds of the life insurance do pass to the family tax-free, it does impact the estate value. And then getting back to that estate tax calculation, you know, once we get to a place where, you know, the second spouse passes and we include the proceeds of insurance plus all the other assets, we push ourselves over the threshold of potential of taxation. And, you know, there's no reason to say if I've got $2 million worth of life insurance on myself or my spouse, why would I want to expose that to a 40% tax right now?
Well, yeah, well, let's do this when we come back. Hey, Brian Wheeler from Keystone Wealth Advisors talking about life insurance. And we come back, we'll talk to you how to not pay 40% estate tax on it. You heard it here and only here, Bosma on Business. News Talk 780 KUH.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Welcome back to Bosma on Business. Your host, Mike Bosma, on the phone with Brian Wheeler from Keystone Wealth Advisors. If you need to get in touch with Brian, what's your email, Brian?
It's bwheeler@keystone4wealth.com.
bwheeler@keystone4wealth.com. I was very excited when I found that website domain, Brian. It's easy to remember. Keystone for Wealth. But we're talking about, you know, before the break, life insurance. So in this, I want you to go, you know, for our listeners, go grab a pad of paper and a pencil or pen. The dealio here is, if you have life insurance, especially with the capital gains exclusion, estate exclusion, or exemption rather, going down to $5 million then adjusted for inflation. You know, it should be around $6 million when the dust settles. Person. Well, so yeah, if you got a couple of million, you know, it's easier, especially now that things are, we're in an inflationary environment, just things are costing more and more and more. So, you know, there's really no reason to ever have life insurance held in your name. You have it in this thing called an ILIT. What's an ILIT, Brian?
It's an irrevocable trust that's designed specifically for life insurance. They can still benefit the beneficiaries, the family members, and or even provide liquid dollars at the time of the estate tax calculation to actually pay for estate taxes and not have to sell off other hard assets to try and accommodate that, especially if you know, you go through a time where asset values are down. That's a terrible time to try and come up with liquidity to pay a tax. But by using that type of an irrevocable trust that owns the life insurance, you're removing that entire value of the death benefit out of the estate.
Right. And so in the ILIT, Irrevocable Life Insurance Trust, that basically owns that policy. You make gifts to it to pay for the insurance. And the game plan there, people, is you know, by doing it that way, it stays out of your estate. Still tax-free, but it's out of your estate. And the reality is, you know, this is probably the best example is this last year when there was the research and development tax credit. There was a similar deduction for those types of expenses under Code Section 174. And they that got repealed at the end of 2022 to be able to deduct those if you know, unless Congress acted. And everybody thought, you know, this is a big no-brainer. They're going to act and fix this because nobody wants R&D expenses capitalized over 5 years, right? Right? We want people to make investments in research and development. That's good for the economy. It's good for innovation. But our elected officials couldn't get to any kind of consensus to make that happen. So now you know, if you've got research and development expenses, you're capitalizing those, deducting 10% in 2022, and then the rest over the next 4.5 years. Lucky you. So you know. So if they can't get together, if your elected officials can't get together over something as simple as research and development deduction, you know, something, you know, there's just people that just believe rich people, you know, need to give all their wealth to the government. Yeah. Now, I do not subscribe to that philosophy. In fact, I would say I think our hard-earned dollars should stay in our family and that we get to decide where that money should be deployed. Now, maybe I want to give it to charity. Maybe I want to give it to government. But I get the ability to do so on my own volition rather than being just, you know, kind of the swipe that money into the government coffers. So simply doing an irrevocable life insurance trust, an ILIT, that titles that policy, it's the same policy. But after you get that policy going, it's difficult. I mean, you know, to transfer into the ILIT, and then it's a bigger potential taxable gift anyway. So actually, that's a good question for you, Brian. Is, you know, so if I have all my our listeners, they're like, hey, okay, Bosman Wheeler, you got my attention. I have life insurance. I own it individually. I need to do an ILIT. Can you transfer that policy into the ILIT? How does that work, or do you have to rewrite it?
You can. We often recommend rewriting it because there is a 3-year clawback rule. So basically, if you were to transfer an existing policy into the ILIT, as long as you live for at least 3 more years, everything's okay. But not having a crystal ball, as long as you're still healthy, a lot of times we'll just write a new policy and make sure there's no issues. We don't have a 3-year whoops and actually bring everything back into our state and have to pay out the taxes.
Right. Yeah, because I think it's also a taxable gift. So I think that's where, I think it's also a taxable gift. So I think, you know, if you've got a big build-up cash surrender policy, you're going to eat into some of that lifetime exemption you're trying to save. So
yeah, it can be.
Yeah. So, but like I said, that's where, you know, we can help fix those things. A lot of times it just involves, as Brian said, just write a new policy, let the other one lapse and write a new one. Easy, skeezy, lemon, squeezy. Then that's fine, right? Then just pay for the new one. It's really not that much different. But yeah, the reason you got to get skippy on this stuff, people, is sometimes you become uninsurable, right? Like you have this thought, I'm going to do a 23andMe and find out you got some bad DNA, and now you can't get life insurance. So you know, we're it's all rainbows and unicorns till it's not. So that's why it really is important to get this stuff taken care of before while you still can, you know. So I on the phone, we tackled the life insurance issue with, you know, hey, if it's in your estate, you got to get it out of your estate. You can do that with an irrevocable life insurance trust. Doesn't cost a lot of money to set up. Doesn't cost a lot of money to maintain on a $1 million policy. Saves you $400,000 of estate tax if you have a taxable estate. That's why he's like, there's no reason not to, right? Every policy should be in one of those. I think it's just being smart. And then on the, I guess some of the other things that you've been tackling, we had one case that was fascinating to me. The client was, trying to think about, retirement. They didn't have a comprehensive plan done, but they did talk to a life insurance agent about a whole bunch of life insurance and annuities. Let's dig into that one.
Yeah, there's some philosophies that it holds some merit, trying to avoid a potential tax rate swell over the next many years. A lot of people in our industry believe that tax rates will go up for all of us in retirement. To me, I think it's a little bit of an extreme belief system, but, they are talking to people about taking assets and moving into a more tax-efficient vehicle, life insurance and or annuities, to try and detax their overall asset mix. And like I said, I think there's some merit in that. The challenge I see sometimes is the actual either life insurance vehicles and or annuity vehicles they're using. Certainly there's many different types out there, and just trying to pinpoint the most efficient version of that for your client can be challenging. But I think also, I take more of an approach of a more balanced approach. Tax rates probably will go up. Will they double or more than double over the next 10 or 20 years? That seems like a stretch, yet that's the storyline that everybody's telling. And I think there's some other merits to both cash value life insurance and annuities that aren't just tax-efficient vehicles, but can provide some asset protection, can provide more predictability. I just don't know that some of those other advisors are really telling the whole story and balancing out the needs with the realities,
Well, like the whole story, like how much commission they get if they sell them this big fat annuity.
Yeah, we've seen some. I use some people a little bit smarter than I am to help us evaluate some of these different policies, because, like I said, there's so many carriers with so many different tools and all the nuances of the tools. And yeah, we actually saw a policy as it was designed that was proposed in a way that ramped up the commission as high as possible within the regulatory environment. And there was other ways to design the policy that would have lowered the commission and been a better fit for the client.
Right.
But the client will never know that, right?
But the client's going to pay for it. They just don't, it's not like they're shopping these things around. It's like, oh, that's what it costs. So, and right. That's the problem, right? It's like, unless you're working with an RIA, which Brian is, they don't have a fiduciary duty to tell you what their fees are, how they get paid. We're open kimono on that. I just think it's important in integrity to say, yeah, we get paid, and by and large, people are hucking these insurance policies or annuities. Just ask them, well, how much do you get paid? And is there a way for you to get paid less so my policy will cost less? So let's do this. We come back. We've got Brian Wheeler, Keystone Wealth Advisors. And talk about, what kind of yield you should be chasing. And, is this a high yield environment going to stay around for the foreseeable future? We come back. It's Bosmond Business. News Talk 780 KOH. Welcome back to Bosmond Business. Your host, Mike Bosmond. Hey, if you extended your tax return on 415 and maybe didn't pay everything you needed to, I just want to give you a little tax nugget at the bottom of the hour here. And that is had to do with the California flood. And so there's a provision under the presidentially declared disaster areas that if you were impacted by the California floods, that you got an automatic 6-month extension to pay your tax, not just file your tax return. And I had to do this for a client where I had to get really insightful about what that is. And I'll give you the example. So it says if you are in California or your business is in California, or if you were impacted by the flood. And so I had a situation where a client had a partnership return that needed to be filed. He did not tell me that partnership return was in existence. And so, he was like, hey, I that was due on 315. And all of a sudden, around 450, he's like, okay, well, you need to extend this. So I go, well, that tax return was due a month ago. And so we're like, oh, crud, you're going to get these penalties for not filing your partnership return on time or not extending it. So, and I said, well, the only exception to that is if you're impacted by these California floods. And he said, well, I was in Monterey. I couldn't get home. I go, well, there you go. So, again, that gives you a automatic six-month extension and an automatic 6 months extension to file and pay the tax return. So, you know, it's if you were impacted by those floods, maybe even tangentially, you have an argument at least to be able to get that free 6 month waiver of paying your tax. And especially now, interest rates are up, so you know it feels like used to be interest rates for so long were negligible, but now the fact that they're non-deductible, if you're paying the late payment penalty, late payment interest, it feels more like a 12% loan interest, you know, than, you know, a 3% loan. So it starts to really add up. So if you need some help, let us know. 775-786-4900 mbosma@keystone.cpa. That was my tax nugget. So always do that at the bottom of the hour. It's fun. Anyway, without further ado, Brian Wheeler, Keystone Wealth Advisor. We're talking about, you know, Brian, you're so underspoken, you know, because like when I gave you that case of where that life insurance agent actually changed the policy so he can get paid more. I mean, I'm assuming the other side of that is the policy cost more, right? I mean, is that how that works?
Yeah, you know, it's not a direct correlation, but there is a correlation. Someone's paying more. I mean, obviously, the insurance companies are not allowing that kind of flexibility, so they get shorted. So some of that's got to be passed through. And it's hard to know whether people are doing that knowingly or not knowingly from the insurance industry. Sometimes I don't think that advisors truly know. Some of them who do, maybe, you know, rolling things in their favor a little bit. It's just hard to judge on that. We just know it looks suspicious when we see it.
Right. Well, and that's just, I mean, it's intellectually, if they're juicing their fees, because I'd say if it doesn't cost the client, but usually the way that the client pays is it all has to do about how, you know, the unwind fees if they undo the policy. So, you know, because a lot of those, you know, is the pay-as-you-go plans, you know, no rocket science there, but if you are encumbered into that policy for a significant penalty to get out of it, then your agent's going to get paid more. So that's where, you know, I remember when Brian and I were talking about doing business together, and I said, you know, Brian, there's two types of annuities that I'm familiar with, the good ones and the bad ones. You know, the good ones, you know, relatively safe investment, you know, not a whole lot of hooks to unwind it, although there's penalties, not as abusive as the bad insurance policies or bad annuities that, you know, basically they take it all if you unwind it. Because the life insurance company, if they gave your agent a big fat commission, that you're going to pay that penalty when you say, oh, why do I have this again? And we're in a high interest rate environment. And so, you know, yeah, and it's volatile and it's scary and I get it. But it just seems to me, you know, that Brian, what you said about, you know, saying, hey, our tax rate's going to go up twice as much. I'm more concerned about, you know, the cost of living going up twice as much. And if I'm locked into this now, what feels in coming from a low interest rate environment to a higher interest rate environment, it's like, wow, look, I could lock in it. I don't know, what, 8, 9, 10%. And then if things continue on this pace that they're going, that's going to feel like free money. But then you're going to say, well, I need to get a higher yield, and then they're going to penalize you to get out of it. How do you protect yourself in that situation?
You know, it's difficult to protect entirely, but I think the approach we have with clients is to really take a balanced approach. You know, we've talked about this in the past. I think there should be some short-term money that's relatively safe. There should be long-term money that's relatively liquid and has the ability to chase some higher yield, and not lock in too big of a percentage of anything into something that's got those kind of claws to limit your potential to take advantage of, you know, like I said, rising yields right now. So just, I think, a good balanced approach and not a one-size-fits-all solution. You know, an annuity or a life insurance policy doesn't fix all problems, and too much waiting in an asset like that can be problematic, like you said.
Well, right, and especially if you have some liquidity needs where, you know, he's like, oh, this is guaranteed income for life. Well, that's the life as you know it today. Right. You know, things change. And that's where, like, you know, I appreciate, Brian, your approach on, you know, end of life care. And you just don't want to be locked. I remember when my mom passed away, it's probably 10 years ago now. And she was concerned about, am I going to, I got to make this thing last, you know? And so she bought a $50,000 annuity that, you know, paid her a little bit per year. And I'm like, this is insane. My mom had COPD. She, you know, the average lifespan, as soon as you're on oxygen, is, you know, less than 5 years. Like, somebody sold her an annuity that was amortized out, you know, like, she was never going to get hold on that thing, ever.
Right.
And I was like, oh, it just made me sick. I was, yeah, you know, I'm not a litigious guy, but there was a moment. I'm like, man, so, and those are things where, you know, the thing I appreciate about you, Brian, is, you know, we're, you know, probably most of the work we're doing now aren't for clients per se. You know, they're clients because they pay us a fee to look at stuff. They just want to kind of a free, or not a free, you know, but, you know, they'll pay for a consultation. I'll pay you for your time, Brian. Help me understand the economics of this. You don't have a horse in the race. So, mm-hmm. you know, I don't feel like you're trying to sell. You're just trying to, like, hey, no, this to understand what they're buying and if there's better products out there, you know, kind of be able to get a second opinion and see if it makes sense. And, yeah, we charge for that. You know, it's not free. But, you know, a lot of times people say, well, I don't want to pay for a financial plan because, you know, my financial advisor give it for free. How does that free thing work with some broker dealers? Why do you do it for free and why do we charge?
Well, yeah, that word free from a regulatory environment is really taboo. There's nothing in life is free. You know, usually if people are giving away free advice from a financial planning perspective, it's because there's an intent and expectation there's going to be a sale, whether it's investments or insurance or annuities. You know, they're doing it to tee up the next conversation, which is a product and a solution based on a landscape they've created to help you see the opportunities that they're making improvements for you on. So we're very careful to make sure our financial planning is standalone. That's just paying for advice with no product. And then anything we do, whether it's investments or otherwise, you know, those are three separate pillars and they're not all wrapped into one. And so you get the fairest pricing structure no matter what you're doing working with us.
Right.
It just makes more sense.
Well, yeah, it's just, yeah. Yeah. And you know, talk about your financial planning product. What is that process to do a comprehensive financial plan and what do you get as a roadmap when it's done?
Well, like anything, every individual or couple is unique in their situation, but just as a general, you know, the first thing we're going to do is really take an inventory of how things look today financially. What do you have in the way of assets? How does your cash flow look? What does lifestyle really represent? And once we've kind of dialed in on today, the next conversation is, how does life look in the 5 years, 10 years down the road? What types of changes can we anticipate? And can we dial in all those different kind of phases of life? And we use financial planning software, a technology platform that allows us to do the analysis of, you know, not only today, but we can project out 30, 40 years, depending on the age of the client, and start to see likelihoods of success to live lifestyle on their terms based on where they're started and what they see happening in the future. You know, it's a much more comprehensive look to see the possibility of success. But not only that, when we do that review, we're looking at estate planning documents, we're looking at tax opportunities, we're looking at things to help tee up a better mix of assets when we do hit retirement, so we know we can create income plans and tax-efficient utilization of those assets while also protecting those assets as much as we can for the family. So it's, you know, watching out for federal state taxes, watching out for income taxes, watching out for balanced growth opportunities. You know, it's a really very involved, very deeply interactive conversation. Mm-hmm. And we get a roadmap that shows here's where you're headed, and it breaks down year over year over year some of the things we can do to help make improvements. And that becomes our task list.
Right.
And we follow along and make adjustments as time goes on.
Yeah, and I think probably the biggest surprise that people have is not so much how much wealth they need to retire, it's how much wealth they currently consume
Right.
Because like people, the first question was always, well, how much do you think you need in retirement? Well, I think I need $10,000 a month to retire. And then you're like, yeah, but you're a business owner, you're making $500,000 a year. How does that go? And that's $500,000 a year after throwing all your business tomfoolery expenses into the business. And they're like, oh, well, I was like, no, costs are going to increase in retirement, not decrease, right? Because now you have more time, you want to go have some fun. Yeah, so you should be able to save more if you really can live on 10 grand a month if you're making $500,000. Anyway, when we come back, Brian Wheeler is going to tell us the number one thing that you need to know about your retirement. You heard it here and only here at Spasma on Business. News Talk 780 KUH.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Welcome back to Bosma on Business, your host Mike Bosma. On the phone, Brian Wheeler, Keystone Wealth Advisors, who's going to tell us the number one thing. What's that big aha, big takeaway that people need to know about retirement, Brian?
I think one of the discussed issues that's looming right now for people retiring are swelling IRA or 401k plan accounts that are pre-tax that will become taxable in the future. And some of the tax law changes that have happened that create a tax bomb for your heirs should they inherit those dollars down the road. And we're trying to have those conversations now about helping them wind some of those taxable accounts to make them tax-free for the future so we don't have those ongoing implications, because the stretch rules for being able to stretch those types of inherited accounts down the road basically been compressed down to a 10-year period for beneficiaries, which can in turn create a major tax problem for our kids.
Well, and let's put it this way: let's say your kids, they're doing well, they're in the 37% tax bracket, and so you in retirement probably aren't. So, but you're like, okay, I'm trying to save this money, and let's say you're also in a tax, you have a taxable estate, so you're over that, $13 million. When you have a taxable estate and you and an IRA money that hasn't been taxed yet, the easiest, like most no nonsense way to get around that is to kind of do some structured way to convert those IRAs to Roth IRAs. And you have to be smart about it, because if you just do it all in 1 year, you're going to be rung up at the 37% tax bracket, which isn't the worst thing if your kids are going to pay that anyway. But the bigger part of it is then as it grows, at least now it's growing, right, pre-tax or after-tax rather. So that way your kids aren't going to get rung up with it, and there's a lower amount that's going to be left in your estate, right? You help fix some of your own estate problems. And that's what people don't understand this stuff. And that's where even, I would say I have a good handle on it, but man, oh man, it's until I see it on paper, kind of like, what's your situation? You can have different outcomes depending on how well you plan for it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And we have a few clients that are working for large employers, and the 401k plan has been swelling over years. And a lot of those clients don't realize that when you hit a certain age, many of those plans allow you to start moving money out of those plans so you can basically utilize those investments in different ways and deploy them in different investment strategies, including converting some of those dollars early.
Right. So that's just
the earlier you can.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the earlier you do that, the longer you take advantage of that tax-free growth down the road. And again, you got to be cautious not to overtax yourself in the process. But the idea of being able to start working on some of those plans earlier that rather than later can make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I say, you should be able to be the top end of the 22% tax bracket. It's like, pay your 22%, lick your wounds, you'll be better for it down the road. Otherwise, your kids are going to pay at 37%. All right, Brian, thank you so much. Without further ado, next week, I'm really excited about this. This lady, her name's Johnny Romero. She has a company called Mothership Coffee and Sunrise Coffee in Las Vegas. Recognized as one of the top businesses in the United States by the Small Business Administration. So kind of what an honor, and excited to have her on the show next week sharing her journey. Of course, if you need some help, 775-786-4900, mbosma@keystone.cpa. Until then, keep that business engine humming, you people. Bosma on Business, Newstalk 780, KUH.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.